Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 24 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I'm so excited today to have a great friend and a nationally recognized expert, Gretchen Reynolds, here to talk about, well, the first 20 minutes. What does that mean? About exercise, and also with a little bit of a feminine twist to it. What about that gender-specific fitness? Now, before we launch in, I just want to make sure you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to smartypantsvitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and please rate this podcast and review us. I read these things, you know what I'm saying here? And we love to hear your thoughts. So bring them on down. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Wow, what is this whole thing about gender-specific fitness and just getting up and starting to move, assuming the vertical, maybe, and getting more physically active? Are there some secrets here to making all of this happen and keep it happening? Well, there's no one better to describe this whole phenomenon than my wonderful friend and colleague, Gretchen Reynolds. Most of you know her because she's nationally recognized as a phys ed columnist for the New York Times. Her weekly column, which began in 2008, appears as part of the Well blog online and in the Science Times section of the printed New York Times, as well as once per month in the Sunday New York Times magazine. Several of her columns have been among the most emailed stories of the year at the New York Times, and one published in 2013 and entitled "The Scientific 7-Minute Workout" set a record for web traffic related to health on the Times website. I'm going to tell you right now, I have posted that one particular piece countless times on my Facebook, and every single time I get a tsunami of people who just gobble it up and share it like there's no tomorrow. We just can't seem to get enough of it. Gretchen has an incredible past history, and I could be here until my next birthday reading it, but I'm just going to tell you that she was the former senior editor at Runner's World, Bicycling, and Outside Magazine. And one thing I love about something that Gretchen said of herself, well, she's an avid, if increasingly slower, runner and cyclist and lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Oh, my goodness gracious. Gretchen, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. That was quite an introduction.
I know, I'm exhausted. I just need to rest for a while. I'll be back in about half an hour.
No.
Listen,
go do some push-ups. That's the best way to
do it. Oh, Jesus. See, I knew you were going to say that. You were going to go to the fitness place immediately. Now, everyone out there in Her podcast land, I'm going to be talking about Gretchen's book, The First 20 Minutes. Surprising science reveals how we can exercise better, train smarter, and live longer. Hey, sign me up for all of that. I want to do that. When Gretchen first sent me your book, I just loved it. And I'm not just saying that because she is who she is and she's a good friend and all the rest of it. It's just a phenomenal compendium of great science, some practical applications, and just reality-based, hey, you know, it's tough trying to, you know, get active and keep it going all the time. So I just want to ask you, what inspired you to write The First 20 Minutes, and why is it called The First 20 Minutes?
Well, in all honesty, the thing that inspired me to write it is, in some ways, it encapsulates all the information that matters to me.
Oh, great.
A little bit selfish.
It's all about you.
It's actually the information that I found in you know, many years of covering health and fitness science, it's the information that I found to be most meaningful to a fairly normal person, which I think I am, to my life in terms of what is most meaningful about how you can be healthy and how you can be fit, and how those are not necessarily the exact same thing. You can find ways to be really healthy, live a long and productive life without having to run a marathon. And I used to run marathons, so it was really interesting and important to me to learn what the science said about how can our bodies function in the best possible way. And that was really what I wanted to sort of encapsulate in this book.
Now, why 20 minutes? Why not 18? Why not 23? I mean, what's going on with 20 minutes?
The book is really science-based, and that's the one thing I would want people to know, is this is not my opinion. This really is what is exercise science telling us now about how much and what kind of exercise we need to do to be healthy. And one of the most interesting statistics that I found when I was reporting this book is that there's really good evidence that you will get most of the health benefits of exercise. And that means reducing your risks for a whole variety of diseases, increasing your lifespan, in improving your ability to think. All of that generally happens in about the first 20 minutes of exercise, especially if you have not been doing a lot. You continue to get benefits. It's still good for you, but not as much. So if you have been doing nothing, if you've been sitting on the couch for the last 10 years, if you get up and move for 20 minutes, you will start immediately to improve your health, to improve your fitness, and probably to lengthen your lifespan. You don't have to go for 2 hours. Get up and just walk. And it doesn't even have to be 20 minutes all concentrated. You can walk for 5 minutes four times a day. You can walk for 10 minutes twice. You can walk for 1 minute 20 times a day. It appears that all of that has just a profound effect on your health and your ability to live well.
Okay, so what is that profound effect?
It is, as you well know, it is just pervasive. It's every part of your body. One of the really interesting things about writing about exercise science now is that they can show at a really deep cellular level, it changes how just about every part of your body functions. If you sit all day, we are not designed for that. We were not created through evolution to be sitting. So all of our genes, just about every part of your genome, works better if you move. And that, again, doesn't mean you have to run marathons. It means stand up. Walk around your office, you know, every 15, 20 minutes. That changes really quickly the risk of weight gain, diabetes, dementia, heart disease. You can just kick them all off, just about every disease, chronic disease of modern life, and that includes cancer, it includes Alzheimer's. All of these diseases, the risks increase if you are sedentary, and they go down really dramatically if you move, even if you just stand up.
Oh, I love it. And, you know, that whole issue of there was that great research that came out. They looked at 60-year-olds and they measured a very critical piece of the brain, the hippocampus, which really houses a lot of our memory and cognitive learning. And they measured the size of it. And then they simply had these individuals, male, female, walk They didn't join the Olympics. There was no marathon running involved. They just flip and walk. They assumed the vertical and kept it rocking. And they did it basically accruing, as you said so nicely, accruing about 60 minutes a day in this case. They wanted to measure this out. Nothing else was changed. You know, they didn't join an ashram. They didn't start meditating, you know, 18 hours a day. They didn't immediately, you know, flip to the paleo diet or something. No, they just simply lived whatever life they were living. All they did, the one intervention, was simply walking. And that was it. We didn't even give them the speed to walk. They just, you know, walk. And there you have it. Over the course of a year, something pretty amazing happened. And that is something we call neurogenesis. And that means that they actually built up more brain cells. And in this case, they wanted to measure this in one particular part of the brain. And lo and behold, it was a hippocampus. It increased in size. It flippin' increased in size. And no wonder they have better cognition and better memory when they do regularized physical activity. And what were we looking at? Anywhere between, about 4% increase on average. Hey, I'll take that. I don't know about you, Gretchen. Well, if you want a bigger brain.
For most of us grew up hearing that we were born with all the brain cells we would ever have. And
that's right.
And we went through college drinking beer and killing them off. But in fact, as anyone who follows biology news knows, it's now proven that we do keep making new brain cells in just a few parts of our brains all the way up until when we die. And the main area that we make new brain cells is the hippocampus. It's where we store our memories. And they've done studies in animals, which they can't do in people. But if the animals exercise, they make 3 or 4 times as many of these cells as the animals that are sedentary. So if you're sitting around, you will make some new brain cells. But if you move, and again, this wasn't a lot. This was, for mice, this was just, you know, basically getting up and stretching and going for a stroll. And they made 3 or 4 times as many new brain cells, and they performed so much better than the other animals on all the tests of rodent intelligence. And as you said, the only thing that was different in their lives was they moved around.
I mean, you know, I just love that, Gretchen, and you said this so eloquently. You know, a lot of people don't realize the return on investment that they get for becoming more physically active. Most of the time, I don't even use the word exercise because people kind of break out in hives and run away from me. So I kind of, you know, try to approach it a little bit differently here. But it's so terribly important. You know, in your book, once again, the name of the book is The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, and Live Longer. You had a really great chapter. Well, heck, all the chapters are fantastic, but one really captured my attention. It's called When Bad Things Happen to Good Workouts. And I loved it. I went through every single piece of this whole issue of, you know, a lot of people blow off runners. You're going to blow your knees out and all the rest of it. Go to the knee place.
Yes. Well, both of us are runners, so you cannot possibly be a runner past the age of about 20 without having lots of people say to you, you're going to ruin your knees. Well, the science absolutely disputes that. It's really quite clear that unless you have a history of knee injuries, if you have actually ever torn your ACL or otherwise hurt your knee, you might want to reconsider running. But for everyone else, the science is really clear that it seems to actually improve the health of your knees. It improves the health of all the cartilage. You have less chance of arthritis. You have less chance of losing your mobility if you are running. They did one really good study at Stanford that followed a group of older runners for, I think it was 20, 25 years to see how their knees did. And a few of them, yes, developed arthritis, but compared to a control group that did not run, the runners had much less likelihood of actually developing arthritis well into their 80s. So if you do not have a history of knee problems, running will almost certainly be good for your knees and will not hurt them.
Okay, now, in another one of your columns, just to sort of prove that I read every single one of your columns, in another one of your columns, there was strikingly fascinating new information about how much you actually have to run every week if you're going to run. And it was a mind blower. So the answer is not 30 miles, 50 miles, not even 10 miles. How many miles is it, Gretchen? I mean, it's amazing.
Well, there are actually two studies that I think are really interesting. And these are actually from two different columns that I wrote about. If your goal is to be healthy, to live a long life, to reduce your risk of heart disease, and you have not been doing much exercise before, there was a really large study that found that 5 minutes of running a day lengthened people's lifespan substantially. And that was not...
Okay, now we're going to stop right there. We're going to stop right there. I want everyone out there in her podcast land to pick yourself up off the floor, because I know what you just did. You fell off your chair or the couch or wherever you were, right? It's 5 minutes, and you don't have to be running a 5 minute mile.
No, it was actually fairly
minutes.
The running speed for most of these people was what most people would consider a pretty slow jog. It really was very moderate, and again, 5 minutes led to a really, in this study, was associated with a really significant increase in lifespan. And that, you know, that's what a lot of us are aiming for, is a healthy, longer life. There was another study, though, that, you know, if you have started doing your 5 minutes of running and start to become more fit, that there was another study that showed over the course of years, the absolute sweet spot for both health and fitness, if you want to improve sort of your general fitness, was about 20 to 25 minutes of very slow jogging 3 times a week. So if you've started your 5 minutes and that starts to get really easy, aim for possibly getting up to 20 to 25 minutes of jogging. And that's really slow. That doesn't mean that you have to be doing a 6, 7, even 8 minute mile. These were primarily about 10 to 12 minute miles, and 3 times a week. And that, a very large study found to be the absolute sweet spot for being as healthy and as fit as you can be. And more was not better. That was as much as you needed to do.
I love it. And you know, nothing, seriously, nothing but good news today from Gretchen Reynolds of the New York Times. Nothing but good news. Now, we're also going to blow everyone's mind by flipping from cardio over to strength training for a second. You published something that literally changed my life in a big way, right? There's osteoporosis, which is the thinning of the bones, in my own family. My mother had severe osteoporosis, so I'm on osteoporosis alert. Now, I have been lifting weights for over 30 years. I was doing it before it was cool. It was just me and the guys with the do-rags over in the corner lifting. It was a scary crowd. It's still scary, but there's just more women who are there. They're scary too. Okay, so I would say to myself, indeed, you know, lifting weights and doing strength training is really strengthening my bones. And sure to form, we have seen that. I mean, clearly, if you're sedentary and don't do anything, that's one thing. If you're swimming or biking where you're not really making impact, that's another thing. And what you're really trying to do is stimulate bony growth in the cortex of the bone so you can maintain good, strong bones. And then you wrote a column. Yes, you did. You did it again, Gretchen Reynolds. And you said, wait a minute, whoa, hold on now. Now, yeah, we get it with the swimming and the biking because you're not weight bearing and you're not really, you know, hammering. So you're not stimulating bony cortex, any way significantly. Okay. So that's cool. Strength training is indeed good for the bones. But there was one other thing that turned out to be, much better for the bones. And what was it, Gretchen?
Jumping up and down.
You heard it.
Which does make sense. I mean, if you think about it, the best science shows that the single best way to stimulate bones is to stress them. And you know, that's how we adapt, right? In every aspect of life, you strain yourself almost to the limit and you get stronger. Jumping more so than running, more so than weight training, does seem to slightly, you know, stress the bones in a way that is really good for them, and does seem more than any other type of activity to pretty directly stimulate bone growth. The only problem with jumping is if you have really weak bones already, it might strain them a little too much. So before anyone out there starts just jumping around, consult your doctor, make sure it's completely safe. But if you get clearance, or if you have no history of bone problems in your family or in yourself, even, you know, 5 minutes of jumping up and down, jumping with a rope, and amusing your spouse by hopping around your office does appear to be really effective at helping you to develop stronger, sturdier bones.
And I think it's really important for everyone out there to be as creative as they want to. You know, when you dance, you jump up and down in many respects, right?
Absolutely.
If
I could give everyone out there one piece of advice, and this I have incorporated this into my life, it's don't think of this as exercise. I mean, you had mentioned that. Think of this as doing something you enjoy. Find the one way of moving around that you really like. You don't have to follow what anyone else does. If you don't like running, don't run. If you love dancing, that's wonderful exercise. Find the thing that gives you pleasure, and that is the activity you will stick with. And anything you do is better than not doing something.
I love it. And what I've been challenging myself ever since I read that, you know, when I broke out in a cold sweat going, oh, I got to do a little something more here, is I'm trying to practice that boxer's jump rope, you know, where you just sort of shift from leg to leg. And the reason why is I always protect my knees. And as I've aged, you know, I'm really making sure my knees are still okay. They're great. They do have those interesting little noises that happen during yoga class. And I have to raise my hand saying, yes, that's all coming from me. Little creaks and cracks and things. But really, at the end of the day, I got to protect them. I found that boxer's jump rope thing is really challenging. And at the same time, when you do it with finesse, you are indeed leaping, going up and down, but not like a ridiculous amount, just enough to be able to shake up the body. And so, if anything, it challenged me to add something else that was really fun, you know, to my whole regimen, which is kind of cool too, right?
Well, and that's also good for balance, which is another thing that any of us who are no longer in our first blush of youth, it's a very good idea to practice balance. And one other thing that people often mention that they took away from my book is they have started brushing their teeth while standing on one leg, which is actually what a researcher told me he advises people to do to improve their balance. And so I now do that. I've been doing it for a few years. And now I also do it with my eyes shut. So just, you know, when you
show
brush
off
your teeth, stand up and then I wobble while I'm doing it. But it is, I mean, there are really easy ways to incorporate a lot of the sort of training tips into your life that don't have to, you don't have to go to the gym. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. While you're brushing your teeth, stand on one leg. You're doing very high-level balance training.
Well, you know, let's go to another interesting place, okay? And that is women, right? Women
yes.
and fitness. Yes, the nightmare. No, I'm so sorry. It's an interesting thing. In your research and in the, you know, in your journalistic research and as you've been writing about fitness per se, are there any gender specific nuances here that we could really gift our wonderful podcast listeners with?
Countless, and the. One of the problems in enumerating them is most of them have not been studied because women are very rarely actually included in a lot of the exercise science studies. And that is partly because that the scientists are very open when I ask them why. They will say it's because women have periods and it's hard for us to sort of accommodate that. So there are many issues of women's reproductive cycles and whether they have an effect on exercise that we do not understand yet. That there's a little bit of evidence that, you know, women maybe at slightly higher risk for things like an ACL tear early in their period, but we don't know that for sure. There's some very good evidence that women are much better at pacing themselves through runs than men are. So if you're doing your first marathon, find yourself a training partner who's a woman, because she'll pace you through it better than a man. But a lot of the issues of things like whether women, you know, use fuel differently, whether we store fat differently, whether our periods affect how well we can think, that there are some issues that really need to be studied and have not. And I think it won't happen until we start seeing a lot more women who are exercise scientists.
Isn't that interesting? You bring up such an incredibly important point. As you're well aware, I'm a fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine, and this is the college where it's an international college where one of the things we do is we house most of the exercise scientists and the main folk who do this research. And the good news, Gretchen, is we do have more and more women coming through the system. And I think there's going to be a greater thrust at including women in this. It does make me crazy. It drives me crazy, and it's a short drive. And I'm also going to say that even when I was a scientist at the National Institutes of Health, I remember hearing that we were going to do a study on seasonal affective disorder. We were looking at body composition changes that happen over the seasons. And I was collaborating with the National Institute of Mental Health on this. And one of the first things I when we were beginning to recruit was I heard this whole thing about, you know, how it's such a problem with women, because we have menstrual cycles. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And we had something rude called children that have to be, you know, housed somewhere while a woman is, you know, one of our participants. And I solved that problem in a heartbeat. Number one, I reminded everyone that, excuse me, the last time I looked, there's an estrous cycle in every single one of the animals we're studying. And it's not like we toss them out either. We include them all. If we can include a little mousy mouse, you know, as an estrous cycle, trust me, we will be bright enough and creative enough, and we will work harder to be able to include women. And then with regard to children, it was simple. It was, I'm going to share with the whole world. And that is, I looked at the postdoctoral, you know, students who came through the system who were hungry to get their name on a paper. And I said, well, now, one of the requirements to be able to do that is you're going to have to babysit. That's right. So when the women showed up, next thing you knew, you had these men and women, you know, taking care of kids. It was absolutely a scream. And you want to know something? It went so smoothly that it became a template for other people doing the same thing. Because I was not going to, you know, hear that as an excuse. Women have to be studied. Women have to be included. And as you're well aware, you know, extrapolating from men to women is absurd.
It's probably more absurd than extrapolating from mice to men. So, yes, I think we need far more research and also studies that have both men and women together so that we really can tell the differences and whether some of them are meaningful or not. And we just don't know yet.
Okay, now, everyone out there, you know, as we're bringing this to a close, I just know out there that you've read Gretchen's most recent column, and that is one on a very new player in the whole game of, wait a minute, another benefit to physical activity that actually has something to do with body fat? Gretchen, reveal all.
Well, the column that I just wrote is about a newly discovered hormone called irisin. And it's kind of amazing that we're still discovering hormones that our body creates. But this one seems to be created almost exclusively after exercise. It's produced by working muscles. So you get this big surge of irisin after any type of exercise, it appears. And it gets into the bloodstream, and it goes to your fat cells. And there it jumpstarts a very complicated process that turns your white fat brown. if you don't know what that means, brown fat is much more metabolically active. It actually burns calories. It isn't just this inert fat. So if you can have some of your white fat become brown, you burn a lot more calories, and there's much less risk of blood sugar problems and diabetes in people who have more brown fat. And so the study that I wrote about was strictly in cells themselves. It was not in people, but it was in human cells. It wasn't from cells from mice. And when they added the irisin to these fat cells, they were much more likely to produce all of these various proteins that do turn the cells brown, and the fat tissue itself was much less likely to sort of grow more fat. So you have this hormone that you produce during almost any type of movement that can both improve sort of the quality of your fat, and it looks like it can make your body less likely to put on more fat. So just go move. There's many benefits.
Go brown, I say. Go brown.
Yes. Yeah,
that brown fat, you know, when I did my research in the National Institutes of Health, basically I was a fat cell scientist. And one of the things I loved to look at was the difference between brown and our regular, either white or yellow fat, because it depends upon where it's located. And one of the things we realized was that brown fat was a powerhouse. The mitochondria, the little engines in it, were just supercharged, and they're real calorie burners. And when I read this study and your wonderful column in the New York Times, I just smiled ear to ear going, yeah, there they are again. And the very fact that we can now take advantage of this brand new hormone and to understand yet another incredible benefit of getting up and moving it, getting more physically active, just made my day, seriously. So, all right, as we're wrapping it up here, Gretchen, you know, why don't you toss it out there? We've got, what if a woman out there, as she's listening to the Her podcast, is sitting on the fence, or maybe you have to talk her off a ledge, and she's saying, oh, physical activity, you know, what? How? What can you tell her right now?
The very first thing I would say is if you are not moving at all, you really are fighting the, you know, species-long heritage of human beings, your body wants to move. Almost every single gene within you works better if you move. And that doesn't mean that you have to go run for 5 miles every day. All it means is do not sit still for long periods of time. It is so unhealthy for us to be still. We don't think as well. No part of our body works as well. So if nothing else, stand up. Even standing up has been shown to dramatically reduce the risk of someone developing diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. So if you can stand up every 20 minutes, set a little dinger on your computer or your phone that just tells you to stand up. And then once that becomes easy, walk around your office or around your house a few times. What you will find, and I do believe this really strongly, is your body will start to enjoy that. And when you feel that, I think you will start to want to move more. But you don't have to move a lot. Again, most of the health and fitness benefits come from moving around 20 minutes a day. If you can achieve that, you will be healthier and much more fit than otherwise.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So I want everyone out there in her podcast land to go on out and buy The First 20 Minutes. Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, Live Longer by Gretchen Reynolds. Everyone, we've been talking to Gretchen Reynolds, who is a phys ed columnist for the New York Times. And what I'd love for all of you to do is stay up with her columns on a weekly basis. Go online and search Gretchen Reynolds, New York Times, well, and just catch up on all of the wonderful science, because she puts it in digestible bites so you can understand this and also, most importantly, apply it and improve your life, and certainly understand why it's so terribly important to get a heck of a lot more active. Gretchen, thanks for being on the Her podcast. All right. So remember, buy the book, and if you want to tweet out it to Gretchen, do it at Gretchen Reynolds. Ask her a question. Go ahead and bother her. She loves to be able to respond to people. And then you could also hit her on the website, well.blogs.newyorktimes.com. That's nytimes.com/author/Gretchen-Reynolds. Ah, what a great podcast. I got to get up and just sort of exercise. It just makes me do this. All right. Welcome to, once again, more wit and wisdom from one of our experts. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you please leave a review as well? We read them. We love them. This is how we entertain ourselves. I know we need a personal life. Okay. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Hey, follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and please stay well.